The National Security Advisor says there are some sticking points. Still,
we share the assessment that many areas of difference that previously existed have been narrowed, that we believe we are closer than we have been.
On CBS's Face the Nation, John Viner added, this is an extremely delicate situation.
The mantra that nothing is agreed until everything is agreed really does apply, and we do not yet have an agreement in place.
Viner also says the U.S. has cautioned Israel to protect Palestinian civilians in Gaza as it steps up combat operations. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
Russia launched several waves of drone attacks on the Ukrainian capital Kyiv overnight for the second night in a row, stepping up its assaults on the city after a pause of several weeks. Some senators are pushing for a multi-billion dollar aid package that bundles money for Israel, Ukraine, and the southern border. Maryland Democrat Chris Van Hollen on CBS's Face the Nation.
We have to get it done by the end of the year. We have to pass the supplemental request, which includes desperately needed military assistance for Ukraine, support for Israel, humanitarian assistance.
Vice President Kamala Harris was among the officials today announcing the reopening of a section of Interstate 10 in L.A.
To all the Angelinos, I would just say this. Tomorrow, the commute is back on, and happy Thanksgiving. There's so much to be thankful for.
An arson fire closed a section of the highway last week. CBS News Los Angeles reporter Nicole Comstock on the search for a suspect.
He's described as a 6-foot-tall man in his 30s with black hair. He has a big knee brace on his right leg and burn injuries on his left leg.
An endorsement of Donald Trump today by Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
Join me in giving a Texas-sized welcome to President Donald J. Trump, the former and future president of the United States of America.
The beginning of Thanksgiving week in the East will be rainy, and it will be a snowy holiday for some, says National Weather Service meteorologist Bob Orovec.
The system that's going to be affecting the central, the eastern United States over the next several days, mostly rain. There is some potential for snow to begin as snow across northern New York State, northern New England.
Some parts of upstate New York could get freezing rain or even heavy snow on Wednesday into Thanksgiving Day. The U.S. Army has been sending letters to about 2,000 soldiers that it kicked out for refusing to get a COVID-19 shot, asking them to come back. The letter says they can get their military records corrected, and if they want to get back into their uniform, check with a recruiter. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Exactly.
The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help. Anyone can call or text 988 or chat via 988wisconsin.org to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor. Trained counselors are here to support anyone experiencing a suicidal, mental health, or substance use crisis. You can also contact 988 if you are concerned about someone. 988 is confidential and free to all Wisconsin residents. 988, 24/7.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Plans to expand part of Interstate 94 in Milwaukee are reigniting a debate over the environment. Mike Mohn has more on a new study that suggests narrower traffic lanes could lessen the environmental impact of new road projects.
Research from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health was more focused on urban roadways with speed limits of around 35 miles an hour. Dr. Shima Hamidi helped lead the study, which says switching from lane widths between 12 and 11 feet, long the norm, down to 9 feet helps reduce traffic collisions. She says it also leaves more room for options that don't involve vehicles.
It also will help many people to switch from driving to other modes of transportation, such as biking and walking, which could results in greenhouse gas emission reductions from transportation.
The study notes that with narrower lanes, people won't feel compelled to drive as fast and will be more alert. Hamidi says while this approach might slow traffic, past research shows minimal effects. That means these changes wouldn't cancel out environmental benefits. Hamidi also notes that transportation planners and engineers have expressed liability concerns. But she says her team's study is one of the first to give cities and states firm data on the traffic safety side, showing that skinnier lanes are more effective.
We are getting more and more interest from transportation planners, mostly at the local level. Cities are eager and interested to really see how this could be implemented.
Hamidi says the next steps involve more research to quantify some of the other impacts, including air pollution. The study issued this month analyzed nearly 1,200 streets in seven cities around the U.S. The findings come amid a gradual increase in pedestrian fatalities over the past decade. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Meteorologist Rodney Price, plenty of sunshine, just a few high clouds going into the afternoon, east-southeast winds at a high of 51. We will have a mostly cloudy sky overnight at 33, Monday cloudy at 46. Rain chances not far behind. They'll enter the picture by daylight. Right now, it's 51.
Local talk about our hometown and all of Wisconsin has gone untapped until now. You're on 93.5 The Tap. Make sure and tell your friends. UK.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Wednesday, November 15th. It's another beautiful day to have you here up north from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or on the Civic Media app or by podcast or social media. Nice to have you here up on the lake, a little place we call Wiscommon Sense, where we're going to unpack the news for you in just a bit. Here's some of what's on tap for this Wednesday morning. President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act does more than anything previously enacted to take seriously our changing climate and improving our energy efficiency. And this week, we're going to talk with Jennifer Gietrich from Wisconsin Conservation Voters, how they are now engaged in public outreach to let you know about the ways you can get some serious financial help to improve the energy efficiency in your own little corner of the planet. Then in our second hour, we're going to introduce a new weekly segment called Homeroom, named for that first daily gathering at school that got us started with announcements and a little camaraderie. We'll use that segment to update current trends in Wisconsin schools, new stories about education, profiles of people going above and beyond to teach our kids. And this week, this is the time to think about running for your local school board. So we'll have a guest talking about that. And there are these new state-issued report cards on school districts and on schools, how they measure up to certain standards. But we think it's fair to ask, how can we expect our schools to get an A in achievement when the legislature gets an F in how they fund it? That's all coming up in our second hour. We'll also get our weatherology forecast from meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. And along the way, we invite your comments at 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. You can call it. You can text it. You can use the app. You can email us, radio at upnorthnewswi.com, or comment on Facebook. Our live video feed of this radio show can be found on several pages there. Let's check the 6 o'clock temperatures, and there's going to be a big difference depending on whether you're in the northern or southern parts of the state. Because remember yesterday, some places had a cloud deck, and they were in the 50s, and others were in the 30s. Things are much more even keeled this morning, so a lot cooler or a little bit warmer depending on where you are. Here on Lake Wissota, it's 45 degrees right now. Hayward's at 33, Park Falls 35, Wausau sits at 41 degrees, Green Bay is at 46. Folks listening to Oshkosh Air Support, you're at 46 degrees. The listeners of the Eagle in La Crosse, you're at 46. Wisconsin Rapids, 44. Madison, 46. And in Waukesha, it is 45 degrees, where we find one Greg Bach, who is not just a board operator, not just a raconteur, but he's also apparently a big-time bingo host, I learned already today. Greg, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm good. So do you do this once a month, this bingo that you help out with?
Yeah.
I know some places have, up here we have a couple of bars that do bingo every week, but yours is a little bit, the one you go to is more of a monthly affair.
Yeah, this is once a month at Lakefront Brewery here in Milwaukee. And it is hosted by Esther Flones, who is a local drag queen, We do the show once a month, and it's a real fun time. It's free. Come on out. And so Esther is the thing you're seeing. She is the person you're there for. I'm there to help out with some jokes, read off card numbers, hand out prizes, and just be as magnanimous as possible while not taking away from Miss Flonase.
Oh, you got this. I mean, magnanimous is like might actually be your middle name. I don't know your middle initial, but I wouldn't be surprised if magnanimous was on there. So, and so you do that well into the night. You're here at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Well before 6 a.m. So, we're very grateful.
I appreciate being here. Thank you, sir.
I will try not to put you asleep during the show here. Let's start with telling you what's in the Up North News daily newsletter. You can sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. It includes, for folks thinking still about how to get rid of all the leaves that have fallen so far, the do's and don'ts of leaf burning, depending on what community you're in. There's also my story on how the issue of affordable housing has received some bipartisan attention in the legislature. And bipartisan legislation is going to be our theme when we start unpacking the news here in just a minute or two. On the website, you can see a story about how a government shutdown would affect you, even though it looks a little less likely today than it did yesterday. And on social media, you'll see some body camera footage of deputies from the Columbia County Sheriff's Office working together to cut free a large buck that got himself caught in barbed wire a couple of days earlier. The officers used bolt cutters and a reciprocating saw to free the buck. And so you can see that. Go to Up North News WI on Facebook and other social media and look for that there. All right, let's unpack the news now. 844-967-2789 is the number to call if you'd like to comment on that at all. Those of you listening on the show who might be driving into downtown Milwaukee this morning will notice a new billboard put up on Interstate 794 at 6th Street. It's a post that's put up by the Democratic National Committee because today marks the 2-year anniversary of the signing of the bipartisan infrastructure law. It's 14 feet high, 48 feet wide. The left half shows Donald Trump and reminds everyone of the running joke that infrastructure week was coming any time now, or it wasn't, and it didn't. And then on the right half is the message Joe Biden got infrastructure done for Wisconsin. Personal aside here, and I've said this before, I'll say it again. One of the great mysteries about Donald Trump, why he never took infrastructure week seriously. It would have been such a winner for him after promising it. But you really see that, unfortunately, Republican politicians, not the voters, but politicians are too far gone to admit that there's actually good ways to spend tax dollars on things like roads and bridges and faster internet. And I, again, point to the example of Republican Governor Tommy Thompson and the rest who got Highway 29 expanded to 4 lanes all the way across Wisconsin. If Donald Trump had done anything close to that, he would have won another term. But it's Joe Biden and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act that got things done. And they list in a White House fact sheet what's been done so far in the state. In general, about $5.5 billion has been announced to at least 327 specific projects that have been enumerated. It covers all of the following: roads, bridges, public transit, clean buses, ports, airports, high-speed internet to rural communities, safe drinking water, electric vehicle charging stations, making the electric grid stronger, getting started on projects that mitigate the damage done by stronger storms because of a changing climate, and cleanup of long-term industrial pollution. These are the kinds of things people have been saying for years. Why doesn't somebody take this seriously? Why doesn't somebody do something about this? When will we have a Congress and a president that takes these kinds of local matters seriously? And it finally happened in the first half of Biden's first term. It's about getting the work done. And while no Wisconsin Republicans voted for it, the bipartisan infrastructure law showed how members of both parties cared enough about investing in these kinds of things rather than more tax breaks for Wall Street. So again, a happy 2-year anniversary to the bipartisan infrastructure law. Just down the road from that billboard, you'll find our next stop as we continue unpacking the news for this Wednesday. American Family Field down the road there in Milwaukee isn't that different from other infrastructures and structures that need to be maintained or they start to degrade. And while there is a fair debate always to be had about sports teams and government spending on stadiums, the headline today is that legislators from both parties voted yesterday to advance a renovations bill, and Governor Tony Evers says he will sign it. You'll recall that at about this time yesterday, we weren't really sure whether there would be the 17 votes needed for the state Senate to approve a plan. As it turns out, there were 19 votes for it and 14 against, with members of both parties on either side of that vote, and in a very heartfelt way, I hasten to add. The Senate bill reduces the state contribution a little bit. It increases the Brewers' contribution a little bit. It includes some new ticket surcharges. And because all of those changes were done after the Assembly had passed the bill, then the bill had to go back to the Assembly for them to sign off on it, and they did so right away. And Governor Evers immediately put out a statement promising to sign it. It wasn't the only example yesterday of legislators breaking across party lines on a major bill. Both the Senate and Assembly moved quickly yesterday to give final approval to a massive overhaul of liquor laws in Wisconsin, a package that's been years in the making to replace antiquated rules from shortly after the end of Prohibition. And while there were a lot of winners in this update of liquor laws, there was one loser, whether it was a big loss or a setback is a matter of who you talk to. Because you see, breweries and distillers, distributors, bars, liquor retailers, they've all been around forever. Wedding barns, far less so. And their lack of clout was on display during yesterday's debate as some of their supporters railed against the power of the Wisconsin Tavern League. Because under these new rules, these kinds of one-day venues will probably now have to get a license. And it's no longer a case of, well, we're just a barn, so you bring whatever liquor you want. Now it'll likely require a license, and they'd be limited to operating no more than 6 days per year and no more than once a month. Pardon my cynicism, but you know, banquet halls and other traditional venues, they're probably not seeing as many big weddings as they used to for a host of reasons. And many people are choosing these new and picturesque venues. You know, one of my daughters was married in a lovely old barn. But whether these new restrictions are going to reverse that trend and push more things back into the old bars and banquet halls, well, that's a trend that we're going to have to watch. Because, again, some people say these wedding barns will be fine. They'll find ways around it. Others are saying that you've really provided a death sentence to these types of small businesses. And so I'm sure we'll hear much more reaction in the coming days. And one last note, in Washington, the House voted overwhelmingly Tuesday to prevent a government shutdown after new Republican Speaker Mike Johnson was forced to reach across the aisle to Democrats when hard right conservatives revolted against his plan. Johnson's proposal to temporarily fund the government into the new year passed on a large bipartisan tally, but 93 Republicans voted against it, including Wisconsin Republicans Tom Tiffany and Mike Gallagher. The measure also prevents the expiration of the Farm Bill. Instead, the current programs will stay in place through next September if this all goes through the Senate and to the president by the end of this week. We'll pause here, and when we come back, visit with Sherita Booker, who has some of the most widely read, most clicked on stories that you find on our social media pages. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
The Todd Almost Show.
What really prompted me to call is how respectful and willing to listen you are. We are human beings. People have their beliefs for a whole lot of reasons. Some of them rational, maybe some of them not.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate the call, Stephanie. Look, we just need to listen to each other. Doesn't mean we always have to agree. I'm not going to give in on what facts are. But we do have to listen to one another if we want to try to get this country back on track.
The Todd Almost Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
This is Petula Clark, and we'll tell you why later this hour.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've
and now on this Wednesday morning, we're going to talk to Sharita Booker, our social media manager at News. We talk about the website all the time, upnorthnewswi.com, but obviously Up North News has presence on all the social media platforms. Sharita puts a lot of stories there. Some of it are original reporting. Some of it other stories that we see around Wisconsin or about Wisconsin that we share with you. Sharita, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Hey, we've talked about this one story as we each week with Sharita, we review some of the most popular, most clicked, most read stories. And so this one had just been newly posted. It caught my eye, and I recall sharing it mostly because of, well, I'll let you get to it, about this post about toilet paper. Tell us about the post and the reaction.
So the post is, did you know Green Bay is the toilet paper capital of the world? So Northern Paper Mills is the world's largest toilet paper producer under the name Northern Tissue. Back in the day, believe it or not, toilet paper was made primarily from wood chips. Ouch. So imagine that. Leaving small fragments when mm-hmm. you're wiping.
Yeah.
They developed a method that made toilet paper actually more soft and splinter-free. So that breakthrough was so significant that they started using the slogan splinter-free toilet paper. And that post had more than 150 shares. And C.A. Smolinski said, no wonder everyone was so cranky decades ago.
That sounds about right. Splinter-free toilet paper. You know, we look back at that and laugh. I mean, someday, you know, 100 years from now, somebody will look back at us and laugh about something. But I can't even imagine. And what I'll just say what I said last week when I first saw this story, it takes you down a Wikipedia rabbit hole about toilet paper that we're not going to share on early morning radio. You go be entertained at some other point, but I'm glad our post was a nice jumping off point for that. Another popular post dealt with wildlife in Wisconsin, not your typical Wisconsin wildlife, at a beach in South Milwaukee. Tell us about that.
So the South Milwaukee Police Department got a phone call about an alligator at Lake Michigan Beach in Grant Park. So that alligator was sent to Mattock and is now safe, but officers have no idea where it came from. I would imagine somebody had it as a pet, maybe, and kind of let it go. Otherwise, how else would it get there?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. There's no way you're getting there otherwise. And it's about as long as your arm, you know, rather skinny. It's, you know, it just kind of looks like a baby alligator, but you don't want any kind of an alligator in your neighborhood or at the beach. And I'm sure that got a lot of great comments too.
Yeah. Pat Lowell commented and said, hitched a ride with some flamingos, obviously.
That's right. We had the flamingos in what, Port Washington for a while or wherever. So, man, we are just a destination here, aren't we?
I know, right? Everybody loves Wisconsin.
Well, look, and then from a serious standpoint like that, and Gloria Simon puts this down, it's cruel to dump a reptile like that. They could have surrendered it to a shelter, and then they would get it to, you know, to the proper people who would take care of it. And if you're going to have exotic animals, and maybe you should rethink that, but if you do, don't just release them. I mean, that's cruel to them as well as a potential hazard to the rest of us, right?
Yeah. Who wants to stumble upon an alligator at the beach?
No, really don't. And so, all right, we'll close as we so often do when you look at our most popular posts. You got to be talking food. And so once again, a story that you see in our newsletter, then we share it on social media. Love these fill in the blanks. What do you got this time?
So we did a blank is Wisconsin's most iconic food. And we had more than 100 comments on that. I saw a lot of comments saying brats and cheese curds and deep fried cheese curds, of course. But we also got other answers like ham and rolls, Friday fish fry, cranberries and Kringles, like all types of stuff. Pat, what would you go for?
I'm going to go with what Cindy put down here. Brandy old fashioned. Because, I mean, it's got, it's got cherries and it's got an orange in there. So that's kind of an iconic food. No, I'm just kidding. Because then you got to go with, the big old garnish for the Bloody Marys as well. So no, yeah. If we get it back to traditional food, I would actually go with the cheese curds because you might be tempted to go with a brat, but you actually can get bratwurst in plenty of other places. But there's nobody that serves up cheese curds the way that you do in Wisconsin. That's pretty iconic, I think.
Agreed. I would go with cheese curds and deep fried cheese curds for sure. Mm-hmm. Nobody has that squeaky cheese like we do here in Wisconsin. Yeah.
No, they do not. So you can look for that post and much more on all of the Up North News social media feeds. And we really appreciate Sherita Booker putting those together for us. Thanks, Sherita. Have a great day.
You too, Pat.
And now coming up at 6:26, let's unpack some more of the headlines. There were two different instances yesterday of politicians acting like children. The degree of whatever you want to call it, toxic masculinity, is just ridiculous in today's political right these days. First off, you had deposed House Speaker Kevin McCarthy either elbowing or kidney punching a fellow Republican as he was being interviewed by a radio reporter. And some audio catches their exchange afterwards as the one chased the other down and they took turns calling each other pathetic. It was, again, just par for the course, unfortunately, in the House these days. Then on the Senate side, there's this lummox from Oklahoma who fancies himself an MMA fighter more than a United States senator, who once again tried to bully a witness in committee because he's done this shtick a couple of times before, trying to be the tough guy, not just the U.S. senator. But this time, he took it a step further, actually challenging the witness, who was the national head of the Teamsters Union, to a fist fight right there in the hearing room. And the distinguished lunkhead from Oklahoma stood up before committee chair Bernie Sanders told him to sit down and reminded him he's a senator and to act accordingly. But of course, the walking roid rage from Oklahoma later went on right-wing cable TV and said, we ought to bring back duels and other fights between politicians. Because sadly, that's where we are in America now. And I'm not putting all the blame on violence in media or wrestling, but I've just noticed this arc, it seems. When you look at professional wrestling, it was once on Sunday mornings, and in hindsight, it was almost adorable with its kind of cartoon level of violence where you stomp the mat with your foot as you put your opponent in a headlock. But then we started hitting people with folding chairs, we ratcheted up the costumes and the music, the production level. Everything has to be a production these days. You get the crowds whipped up into Jerry Springer-like ridiculousness, and now we have a depressingly large chunk of Americans who think this kind of show business violence should be seen among our elected leaders. And I understand that we often compare politics to a circus, but from time to time we're reminded that this is serious business running a country, trying to keep our nation safe and free and civil. There's actual work to be done, but it's getting harder and harder to do it when some of the clowns escape one circus and infect the other. After a brief pause, we're going to talk to Melissa Baldoff. We visit with her every Wednesday for our climate check. And this time around, we'll let you know how there can be money put back in your pocket for making a little investment in your home or your vehicle or other ways to be more energy efficient. That's coming up in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio for a Wednesday.
On air, 93.5 FM. Online, thetap.com. And on the Civic Media app. This is 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News special report. Former First Lady Rosalynn Carter died this afternoon at her home in Plains, Georgia. The Carter Center said she died peacefully, with family by her side. CBS's Deborah Rodriguez.
Rosalynn Carter broke new ground in her role as First Lady. She was not just a private advisor to her husband. She was a political partner in the White House.
I like to know what's going on. Jimmy has always involved me.
She sat in on cabinet meetings as well as briefings from the National Security Council. She even acted as his emissary abroad, mostly on visits to Latin America. But not everyone appreciated her power and influence.
It doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter what he does. We're going to be criticized. You just have to have confidence.
And Rosalynn Carter was confident as well as tough. That's why White House reporters dubbed her the Steel Magnolia.
She was married for 77 years to Jimmy Carter, longer than any presidential couple. CBS News Special Report. I'm Christopher Cruz.
In overtime. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Nebraska jumped out to a 14-point lead in the first half, but the Wisconsin Badgers battled back to send the game into overtime and get the win, 24-17. Braylon Allen with a 3-yard run to score the winning touchdown, ending a 3-game losing streak. Badgers head coach Luke Fickle.
Well, winning's a whole different feeling, so I wasn't kidding. I mean, you guys have seen me the last couple weeks. You see me on the Monday press conferences, and it's been a stretch, you know, on all of us. I think, you know, every kid in that locker room, every coach in our program, and to get a win tonight, it's so great. I mean, it's deep. It's deep.
Wisconsin travels to Minnesota next week. NBA, the Bucks with a 132-125 win over the Mavericks. Milwaukee scoring in 7 of their last 9 possessions to get the win in the fourth quarter. Adrian Griffin.
You know, your fourth quarter got to be your best quarter, especially when you're playing a terrific team like Dallas.
That's Bucks head coach Adrian Griffin with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of sunshine, just a few high clouds going into the afternoon. East-southeast winds at a high of 51. We will have a mostly cloudy sky overnight at 33. Monday, cloudy at 46. Rain chances not far behind. They'll enter the picture by day night. It's 53 at our studios.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
I'm not even clear from conflicting headlines whether or not Robin Voss has the cojones to move forward with impeachment against Megan Wolf. Why would he do such a thing? You know, just a couple of weeks after he said he wasn't going to do such a thing. Well, he's been threatened, huh? By what? A group headed by his primary opponent, Adam Steed.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Timeout!
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Step on up and enjoy what's on tap today. Local talk about the valley and all of Wisconsin. In fact, it's on tap every day. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Oh,
Our theme here is run for something. Make a difference in 2024. And specifically, we're going to talk about your local school board, which once upon a time, these were very quiet affairs, quiet elections of people who wanted to serve their community, serve their school district. Unfortunately, school board elections have become increasingly politicized, increasingly expensive, as certain groups work hard, in my view, to just outright undermine public education. There certainly is a role to be played for people who are fiscal conservatives and who want to be skeptical of, you know, certain things that administration might be doing. But there are others for whom this has become an extreme political measure. It's why we wanted to make the case that if you are thinking about serving your community in some way, shape, or form and wanting to be on a school board, we'd give you a little advice on what makes a good school board member, what it's like to run for school board. And so we're back now with Heather Dubois-Bornon from the Wisconsin Public Education Network and Tim Nordine, president of the Eau Claire School Board. Tim, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Pat. Hello, Heather.
Morning.
Tim, how long have you been on the Eau Claire School Board?
This is my fifth year on the school board.
What made you decide to serve there?
Well, I'm a former high school teacher, and so I've always had a passion for education. I did graduate school in education as well. And increasingly around 2018, I started feeling like it was time to move my experience and expertise into something where I can help our local district in Wisconsin. We moved to Eau Claire in 2015, and I felt like it was time to get involved. And being on the school board with my background felt like a natural fit, but it was really just something to give back to our community in the way that I felt like I had the best set of skills.
Heather, does this check out with what you hear from a lot of first-time school board members?
Yeah, what we see is that people run for school boards because they care about kids. They're looking at what's happening in their public schools, and they're thinking, how can I be part of making sure these kids have what they need? How can I put like my skills and interests to work for the service of my community? I think regardless of folks' politics, that's generally why most people decide they want to step up and run. They just want to do right by the kids that they love in their own community.
The Public Education Network also has put together, I like this, it's called a champion checklist in terms of, you know, how to identify people who might be champions for public education, who might make for good candidates. And again, it's some of it is pretty common sense. But as I looked at the column on the right side, signs that a candidate may be running for the wrong reasons, you list things like lack of curiosity, unprepared, running for political reasons, you know, single issue. And I have to say that as somebody who, as a reporter, has covered a lot of school boards and county boards, it's pretty easy to see early on the ones that came more out of a cause or with an axe to grind than with a notion of service. Do you feel like that's still pretty apparent when, Tim, when you meet folks who are, you know, serving on school boards around Wisconsin or around the country?
I think that we do see a lot of people that are when they're running for the wrong reasons, you're right. It's easy to tell that they, you know, often I think that single issue that you mentioned there becomes an issue. You know, school board is built on governance of the school district. And so you really have to be able to take a high level view and want to know about all kinds of different issues in the classroom. You know, you might be upset about the playground equipment at one of your local elementary schools, but that issue is only one of all of them that can make an impact on our students. And so when you have somebody coming out for a single issue, especially when it's one of the ones that are highly politicized, it's easy to see right away that this might not be a good fit for that person. And in addition, that the lack of curiosity, I know when I have seen people running for boards, you know, I love it when I see candidates in our meetings sitting and watching, or now that we're streaming them online, if I can see them in a list of attendees, that tells me that they want to know what's going on before they even might be elected. And when I don't see them there, it makes me wonder whether or not they want the depth of knowledge that's necessary to really be functional as soon as possible after joining a board.
Yeah, because again, there's many issues that a school board covers, and so to continue pivoting back to a single issue is just not helpful because there is so much to be done, and to keep in mind who you're serving first. And Heather, I'm going to toss you this softball. There's fewer things that irritate me more than somebody that says, I'm running for school board to serve the taxpayer. My comeback is, no, you are not. That's one of the people, but who should school board members be serving?
School board members serve the kids. Their job is to make sure that students have what they need and that they are well representing those needs and the interests of those kids by doing due diligence to the people who elected them to do it. And so, you know, keeping good lines of communication, creating productive and meaningful and valid opportunities for family engagement in the district. These are things that board members really have to make sure that the district is doing well, because ultimately they're policymakers. Their job is to supervise the professional educators who we have entrusted and hired to run our schools and to let them do their jobs with their confidence and trust. And so when we see boards that are very micromanaging of school leadership, that are kind of, you know, getting in the everyday business of students and educators in ways that are beyond their own expertise often, then, you know, those are red flags for folks who are wondering, you know, what exactly is it that you're trying to control here? And are you really being honest to the systems of democracy that are designed to let us govern our public schools in a way that lets educators do their jobs?
Tim, tell us about the intimidation factor, though, when somebody might be thinking about running for school board, and Heather mentions, mm-hmm. you know, you're overseeing all of these professionally trained educators. I'm sure you've heard from other potential first-time candidates, or maybe thought so yourself, as, you know, does everybody have to be, you know, a highly educated, you know, professional educator to be on a school board, or is this something that regular folks can indeed do?
I mean, certainly that's the reason that we have the democratic process. It's to allow regular folks to come in and represent our community and the values of our community, or of course the community that they're running in. And so there's not any special background information or education that you need in order to run for a school board. It's that curiosity and that desire that Heather's talking about to be there for the kids. It will take a big learning curve and a lot of learning to get up to speed on some of these things. You know, just like any profession, we have an alphabet soup of acronyms that you'll have to ask about and learn. But really, the most important thing is being able to support each and every student for who they are, and bring that with, as Heather said, an ear for communication with the community, because part of our job is to represent the values of each community, our individually, you know, grown and local schools, the best that we can, to set that governing ideal. You know, what are the results that we want for our kids? You know, kids coming out of the Eau Claire Area School District, what do we want them to look like as a community? And regardless of whether you're a former educator or you're not, get in contact with your community and do your best to represent those values and build that vision for what we want for our students.
So Heather, where does somebody start if they think that this is something they might want to do, might want to run for a school board? And I'm going to assume, for the purposes of this question, that they have been to one or two meetings, that they're not just, you know, making this decision willy-nilly. So they have seen their school board, but now they're thinking about running. What kinds of resources are available? What kinds of where can they go to ask questions about how do you start a campaign?
Well, first of all, there are loads of resources out there and lots of people that you can connect with. So no one has to feel like they're doing this alone. And I also don't want folks to feel overwhelmed by the sort of enormity of the field of information that's out there about public schools. Like Tim said, you don't have to be an expert to run for school board. You really just have to care about kids and have a certain, like, base level curiosity and humility about what you don't know. None of us knew what we didn't know until we knew it. And so coming into this ready to learn and ready to take that learning and put it into service of the work that you want to do, I think is a really important quality for a school board member. There are lots of trainings for people who are considering running for school board who have already decided to do it. You can visit our website at wisconsinnetwork.org and check out the Elections HQ page for a little toolkit that has some of those resources there for you and some upcoming dates of school board trainings that we know about. And you can look at your local community. I think most districts around the state have an information night. They might lead a little workshop or training that lets you know what is involved in being a school board member and maybe what it takes to run for office. And look at the resources that the state has put together for candidates and the Wisconsin Association of School Boards has put together for candidates. They've got a whole huge packet for people who might be considering a run for office. And all of these things are linked on our website.
And Tim, I know that we're unapologetically progressive over on this radio show. But that doesn't mean that there isn't room for folks of all, you know, stripes to serve on a board. It is not, you know, that the only people who can run for school board are the ones who want to, you know, walk in with a blank checkbook and say, take what you want. But there does have to be that sense of what? Of give and take, of cooperation. So can you tell conservative leaning folks who want to serve their school board, you know, the degree to which there is that kind of room for debate as you talk about everything from spending to curriculum?
Certainly. I think there has to be that room, right? Everyone uses our public schools, and public schools are for each and every child. That means Democrats and Republicans send their kids to public schools, and we all should have a voice in that process. Where it begins to break down, Pat, I think you touched on earlier, is when people are using this lately as a political wedge to try to make parents and community members afraid of our public schools or to drive political issues outside of really focusing on what's truly best for each kid. And outside of that, there's plenty of room for discussion. Because our state has not done its job in funding public schools, we're constantly having to make decisions on what programs, what policies will give us the biggest bang for our buck, and how can we, within our limited budget, go ahead and accomplish these things? And when's the right time to go to a referendum? And there's reasons to say not right now. There's reasons to say right now. And all of that is there for discussion. I think anybody with any political background can come in if they have a willingness to work together, to listen to one another, and to try to really keep front and center that what we're trying to do is create a positive environment for our kids and to develop the community of the future that we want together.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, and I'll save the story for another time, but it's really something to be a Democratic legislator. And there was something related to education where I was one of those who said, well, I get it. I like it. I support what you're doing. But this was, you know, 2009, whatever it was, and we were going through the Great Recession at the time, and saying, well, I'm just not sure that this is where we need to put our resources. And, you know, to hear some people say, it's like, oh, well, so you're against education. Like, no, you have to make these decisions, and it's done on a district-by-district basis based on the conditions that you have right now. So, Heather, having laid all that out, do you think that this is, despite what you hear from school board meetings and book bans and everything else, do you think this is a good time for people to consider becoming a school board candidate?
I don't think there's ever been a more critical time for good people to consider running for school board. Our kids need us to stand up for them right now. Our public schools are under attack and under threat in a lot of significant ways, not just related to funding. And if you care deeply about making sure that every kid is getting their needs met, that we are providing robust and well-rounded curriculum that really give kids a chance to understand the world around us and to be prepared to enter the workforce when they're done with our schools or to move on to college, then you need to step up and make sure that you're doing what you can where you live to be part of that. And for some people, that means serving on the school board. It is a fun job that gives you access to all kinds of information and relationships that you might not have found otherwise. And while it might seem overwhelming, it really does depend on good people with differing points of view who are willing to do the hard work of negotiating for our kids and making sure that we're doing everything that we can as the grown-ups they're counting on to make sure their needs are met.
All right. Heather Dubois-Bornon, thank you. Tim Nordine, president of the Eau Claire School Board. Nice to have you here along as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Hope we can talk to you soon. Yep, Heather, we'll talk again very soon. We'll continue our homeroom series next week. We'll talk about the value just ahead of Thanksgiving of talking about Wisconsin's indigenous population. Back with, what is today? Wednesday. Oh, it's Todd Alba Day. Oh, this will be fun. Back after this on the Civic Media Radio Network.
93.5 The Tap.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
OpUS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Peace, love, and Bobby Sherman, kids. It's just about 7:51 on a Wednesday. Todd Alba joins us now in this spirit of coming together and working with one another. Todd, how are you?
Well, how about you guys?
Oh, very well. I mean, look at the spirit of cooperation we have here. And and look at what we saw in the Capitol yesterday. You had bipartisan cooperation on two huge issues, depending on how you look at it. It was bipartisan cooperation on keeping the Milwaukee Brewers in town and reforming our liquor laws after decades and decades of antiquated language. Or there was bipartisan agreement yesterday to smash wedding barns and kill the industry and waste our money on a billionaire baseball team owner. So, Todd, how did yesterday go for you in a bipartisan way? Or you, Greg?
Go on, Todd.
What?
Go,
Todd. No, go ahead. I was going to say, I thought maybe we were talking about the bipartisanship in Washington, D.C., where Democrats decided to save the country and pass a continuing resolution.
Oh, yeah, saving the country, too. Yes, yeah, there is that. Right, Greg?
Or you could be like, welcome to the Thunderdome that is the U.S. Senate.
Oh, my God. Right, well, that gets us back to the lummox from Oklahoma, whose name I didn't even use last hour. I didn't want to give him the credit. It's something Mullen. And, again, just challenging the Teamsters president to a fight right there in the committee room. Again, the level of toxic masculinity that has infected parts of the political right is borderline depressing or at other times comical.
It was. You know, I will say this. I am not for violence in any way, shape, or form, and what they did yesterday was very embarrassing. But nothing pulls away from the severity of an incoming fight than two men saying, butts. Stand your butt up.
Stand your butt up. Yeah.
I really enjoyed the fact that Bernie Sanders was the one that was able to calm everybody down.
It was,
that
was Bernie.
That was kind of my
You're a U.S. senator, sir. You're just.
All right.
There's company here. There's company here.
Back to the point at hand. I am one who believes that the Milwaukee Brewers, on the whole, is still an economic engine driver for the state of Wisconsin. I still think it's a great marketing and publicity tool for the state of Wisconsin. I know it provides a lot of jobs, not just for people who work at AmFam Field, but the restaurants and the service industry and the bars and all the other places around that facility. So I still think it's a good deal. Certainly there were improvements to be made, and I give a tip of the cap to some of the Democrats, in particular, I think Senator Larson, for offering a couple of amendments to do that. I still think it was the right thing to do, and I'm glad that Governor Evers is going to sign it into law and keep the Brewers here through 2050. And I think the other part of it that gets kind of lost and isn't being talked about enough is with these upgrades, particularly the HVAC, it will become a more year-round venue. So it's not just for baseball. Remember, they don't own it. They lease the facility. And I think it's going to offer a lot more, whether it's conventions or music things or whatever. I think it's going to get used a lot more, and so I think that's good. On the liquor law side, this is something I actually worked on when I worked for former Senator Schultz of the legislature. As you know, Pat, this has been something that has been in the works for years, if not decades.
Yes.
And you know, it used to be like, for instance, if you, Wallersheim Winery in Southwest Wisconsin, I know there's a lot of other smaller wineries across Wisconsin, but they were not able to sell their bottles or cases of wine to a grocery store 10 miles down the road without going through a distributor, basically a middle person that takes a cut. And it was, the laws were just ridiculous.
Wait, which made sense at the time, just coming out of Prohibition.
Oh, sure.
When you were right. When you were setting up the business model that, you know, no one entity could have like monopoly power in the marketplace. But that right. was then, and the laws needed to be updated. But tell me this, because as I was listening to the debate yesterday, and listening to Senator Spreitzer really trying to keep this bill from crushing the wedding barn industry. Whether it does or not, I'm going to set that aside just to say it was clear from an insider standpoint that the Tavern League has clout. Bars and taverns have clout. Breweries, distillers, they all have clout. And the wedding barn industry, it was just kind of like, you know, a bystander going, wait, how did I get hit with shrapnel from all of this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. And it unfortunately proves that in today's politics, like more than ever before, if you don't hire a lobbyist and a really good one and spend a lot of money, you're going to be left on the sidelines. And whether it's Citizens United in elections or whether it's big time lobbying money in the legislature, unless you have a strong advocate and are probably paying for that, you are going to get left behind. Yeah, I know wedding barn people. I know people that have derived their livelihood off of this, and I think it really does suck for them, and I feel badly for that. But I think as a whole, for the industry, I think it's probably better.
Yeah, I mean, again, I can't pretend to know, you know, what I would have done differently on the bill. I just know when I looked at the bill and it said that these places, A, would have to get a license, B, could only operate, what was it, like six times a year and only one time a month. I thought, man, that's like sending a message, you know, from the Tavern League and others. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That says you're not welcome here, and we want people coming back to our banquet halls and what have
you. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, the Tavern League is a huge player, particularly in Republican politics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we have apparently avoided a government shutdown because of the honeymoon period that Mike Johnson's being given as the new speaker. Really, we've just kicked the can down till what, January and February for most of these things. But mm-hmm. For those who missed it last hour, I'd say if one good thing came out of it, and it's not a great thing, but it's a good thing, is that they basically took all of the farm bill. And they, instead of punting that to January, February, mm-hmm. they punted that till September of next year. Mm-hmm. So that's good, but it also means you couldn't improve on the farm bill at all. But we've kind of averted that crisis. But I think don't you think it's still too early to tell if this is, you know, any kind of a net positive or just, you know, again, kicking the can down towards something that's going to be, it's going to just be terrible in January or February if you're like trying to get on an airplane or something like that?
Well, I think that's where the net positive is what we were looking at on Thanksgiving weekend, no less, mm-hmm. is TSA workers not being paid and rightfully weren't walking off the job in some cases. It would have been a catastrophe. So from that standpoint, I'm really happy it got resolved. I'm glad our men and women in the military are going to get paid through the holiday and other government workers. But yes, Pat, I think to your point, it just puts more the problems further down the road. But here's the thing that people, I hope, take away from this. It was Democrats in the House of Representatives who crossed over and passed this bill. There were more Democrats that voted for the continuing resolution than Republicans. And once again, it shows me that the Republican leadership in this country, particularly in the House, simply cannot lead.
No, other people have to step up to actually get the work done. Todd Alba, noon to 2 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you, sir.
The Todd Father.
And Craig, thank you as well. We'll talk to you tomorrow when we will also have Joe Zepecki, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and Hometown Health. And remember, you can stay up to date on all we do at UpNorthNewsWI.com. Pleasure to have you here up north for the day. Have a great Wednesday. See you tomorrow.
From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap. Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Capital One.
I'm Christopher Cruz. Former First Lady Rosalynn Carter, who entered hospice care at home just last week, died this afternoon surrounded by family in the